The garment of Christ's righteousness. How much does it cost? Welcome to The Good Word and a new series on garments of grace, clothing imagery in the Bible. I'm Alden Thompson, and my conversation partners are two colleagues of mine in the Walla Walla University School of Theology, Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology, and Paul Dibdall, Associate Professor of Mission and New Testament. Welcome.
Thank you, Alden.
Let's go with that first question. How much does it cost to get the garment, get into the kingdom?
How much does it cost us?
I left it open. Okay. How much does it cost?
I think the garment is offered freely.
Who paid for it?
God did.
He did.
Yes, he did.
Okay. Now, that sets up a tension that I'd like for us to explore in our lesson today, that we have classic terms in Christian theology, imparted and imputed righteousness. Now, imparted is supposed to be something that Jesus gives to us, whereas imputed is something which it's a legal covering. Then there's a third kind that I suppose we could talk about is that which we do on our own. Or is that possible? Is it possible for people to do good things without knowing about Christ?
Oh, sure. I think it's possible for people to do good things without knowing about Christ.
Okay. Do you have any biblical support for that?
People that do good things without knowing about Christ.
There is a light that lights every person that comes into the world. Okay. That it establishes, I think, a baseline of decency in most human beings.
John 1, yeah.
John 1, okay. Mm-hmm. What do you do with Romans 2? Is that fair game? Those who do not have the law are judged apart from the law? Is that helpful, mm-hmm. or would you not allow that in this discussion?
No, I think that could be the case. You know, I mean, as somebody who likes the theological side of life, I am fascinated by the subject of prevenient grace, which suggests that general revelation, which is the non-scriptural information we have about God, including this illumination that John talks about, the light, that it establishes an inherent sense of conscience and of right and wrong in every human being. Now, mm-hmm. of course, if you grow up in a circumstance where that is not appreciated or where it's suppressed, then your baseline is lower than somebody who grew up in a place where it's higher. But mm-hmm. If it were not for that grace of God, I think that humanity would very quickly descend into an abysmal state where we are simply completely captivated by sin with no recourse. Mm-hmm. And so I think that every child that is born has an infusion, or at least is given a chance, mm-hmm. by virtue of the fact that they enter life untainted by all the wrongs. I mean, obviously there is an inherent fascination with evil, but you're not born into the world with the weight of everybody's sins resting upon you.
Mm-hmm. So. Now, you use that term, prevenient. Prevenient grace. Can you give us an ordinary word for ordinary people?
Well, I don't know an ordinary word for that. That's a technical word, and I don't know a substitution for it. But the concept is not very difficult. It's simply the fact that God preserves the latitude of human beings to actually make decisions and to have a moral sense, mm-hmm. from which they can act. And that would imply that there is an inherent or an almost instinctive goodness in people, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that they can respond from, even though they don't know where it came from. Mm-hmm. So in other words, there are good impulses that people respond to, that the influence of the Holy Spirit resonates with some part of their own soul or being that causes them to do good things.
Okay. Now, there's a passage in Isaiah 64:6. The NRSV says, all our righteous deeds are a filthy cloth, mm-hmm. or as rags, as I think the King James puts it.
And without wanting to be trite, Alden, I would just like to make the point that a filthy cloth is better than no cloth.
Now, you go back to...
In other words, I would... I think this verse is referring to the meritorious value in terms of salvation, that our deeds don't accomplish nothing in that regard. Salvation is by grace through faith. It is a gift. You don't earn a gift. But I don't think this verse can be used to suggest that whether you are doing evil things or good things is immaterial. You know, I think it's saying that you don't earn your way into the grace of God by being good.
Our greatest acts, our greatest righteousness, isn't enough. It's not the heavenly garment that we would sometimes think it is.
And Paul, it's astonishing that when you do a great deed, sometimes if you become a little introspective, it's astonishing how often that's done for selfish motives. I gave a great gift, but I had to tell somebody, see? Mm-hmm. So I've done a good deed, but I also wanted to make sure that I wasn't left out of the... Mm-hmm.
And that's very interesting. One of the textual variants in Matthew 6, where it talks about doing things privately, and your Heavenly Father will reward you. Someone could not resist adding in there, will reward you...
Openly.
Most of your modern translations recognize that was someone who simply said, boy, I don't like this private business. Somebody's got to see this. Now, in that connection, I have been impressed with 1 Corinthians 4:7. Actually, it was a racquetball insight that, in my younger days, I used to be fairly fast on my feet. And I remember playing a racquetball game, one of my colleagues, and he says, Thompson, he says, speed on your feet is like perfect pitch. Either you have it or you don't. And that was an amazing sight for me, because as a runner, being able to turn on the afterburners and leave those guys in the dust, there's no more deliciously wicked feeling than be able to do that. See?
You mean wickedly delicious feeling.
And deliciously wicked, however you want to put it. See? But when I stopped to think about it, yeah, he's right. I didn't merit anything like that. And you have the same problem at the university level. Students may say, I'm not very bright, but I work hard. Mm-hmm. Fine. Mm-hmm. Who gave you the ability to work hard? So whatever it is, it's a gift of God.
Yeah.
And I think that's a rather important recognition, although we'd love to take credit for it ourselves. Now, let's talk about another aspect, forgiveness. Romans chapter 4, Paul talks about, blessed are those whose iniquities are forgiven and whose sins are covered. But in that same chapter 4, he talks about Abraham. Now, Paul likes to play a lot with Abraham, that he was saved by faith. Did Abraham know he was saved by faith? If you read his life, it was pretty checkered, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the father of three generations of liars, or the first of three generations of liars.
Yeah. Mm. So how would you explain that to children, for example? Abraham was the father of the faithful. He was saved by faith. And boy, that doesn't lead to very good behavior. What's the problem with Abraham?
Well, Alden, when I look at the story of Abraham, it seems to me that it demonstrates that faith is not an abstraction like those of us in the Western world like it to be, this idea only. That in his case, it had to have legs on it. That when the invitation came for him to leave Ur of the Chaldees and to go and become a wanderer, to go in the direction that God would lead him until they finally came to the promised land, that had to progress beyond abstraction to actually selling out and moving. Mm-hmm. And I think that just as Abraham's life is a metaphor for a journey with God, I think it is a metaphor for a journey with God, mm-hmm. is that we can't just sit and say, well, I believe. That belief has to translate into something.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
Now, there are many scholars who would like to say that in the Old Testament and possibly in the New Testament, that faith is often better translated as faithfulness.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're suggesting in the story of Abraham.
Yeah. Well, I think in the Western world, we have, because of our fascination with philosophical abstractions, that our theology has gone a lot that way. We like to argue all these fine points. Even some of our discussion here today has been along some fine points of mm-hmm. how much mm-hmm. did the robe cost. Well, it's a manner of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
that can lead us into some interesting thoughts. But in the regions where the Bible was written, I don't think they had these abstractions. Their thought and their living was a lot more concrete. Mm. Obedience meant you went and did something. Faith meant that, you know, there was some action corresponding to your opinion.
Yeah, I wanted to say, it's, I think, echoing, Dave, what I heard you just saying, is that Abraham's sins were committed while on the journey of faith. And that, I think, you know, that would be true for all of us, that our failings would be while on the journey of faith, while in the midst of following God. Certainly,
I like the way you put that, Paul.
But
and that actually makes a lot of sense of the Christian rite of communion, because that is actually a whole system of dealing with the sins of the faithful, those who are on the way, who then transgress, find resolution through that sermon.
And of course, the amazing thing in Abraham's story is Abraham tells lies, and yet it's the people to whom he tells the lies that are punished. Now, this seems so strange to us, but if you're going to illustrate grace, what a better way to do that? And of course, grace is terribly unfair. Sin is terribly unfair, too. But it's a marvelous illustration when you're on this journey. You can make a mess of things, and you're still part of God's community.
And so the parable of the farmer who hired workers at all different times of the day, but paid them all the same.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. Now, I think we have time for one more story or one more comparison here. Paul, in Philippians 3, really gets a bit arrogant there. He says, hey, if you're going to keep score as a Pharisee, you can't beat me. And he goes off and takes the list. Now, I'd like to link that story in Philippians 3, I mean, that commentary from Paul, with the story of the Pharisee and the publican. How does one deal, from a practical point of view, the Pharisee stood on the street corner aware of his goodness? And in fact, he was doing the things that we would expect good people to do. The sinner says, I am a sinner, and he goes bound to his home justified. How does one deal with when you sense that you're getting better and, in fact, good? Does that become kind of a fiction? God be merciful to me, a great sinner?
Well, I don't know what to say about that, except, Alden, I think I would like to fall into the category of the publican. When you start trying to measure your goodness and figure out how good you are, I think you're on pretty tough ground.
Yeah.
Very dangerous ground.
Very dangerous ground, to be sure. Well, I would like to thank both of my conversation partners. Next week, our topic is going to be From Exalted to Cast Down, focusing on the story of Lucifer. Want to thank my conversation partners, and my thanks also to Chad Ofterhauer, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in for the good word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.